Scripture passage this morning is taken from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 32 through 37. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are just a boy, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. Whenever a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went after it and struck it down, rescuing the lamb from its mouth. And if it turned against me, I would catch it by the jaw, strike it down, and kill it. Your servant has killed both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, since he has defied the armies of the living God." David said, "The Lord who saved me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of this Philistine." So Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. The paw of the lion. David countered someone who was saying, "No, no, no, you cannot do this. You cannot do this. You cannot do it." He countered it with, "I've been against the paw of the lion, and I prevailed. Therefore, I know that God is with me. Therefore, I know that I can accomplish it." This passage teaches us, directly and indirectly, that no matter what challenge we face, God gives us the ability to meet it, to meet that challenge and to conquer that challenge. No matter what that challenge is, this passage gives us that reassurance. Saul, of course, was very quick to tell David, "You can't do this. There's no way. You can't do it, and it's not going to happen." He told him first that he was too young to fight against this giant Philistine. Too young to fight against an experienced warrior. Too young to accomplish all that. Now, I find it very ironic that this came from Saul. Saul is the first king of the tribes of Israel, and Saul was not wishing to be king. He was found by Samuel, he was anointed by Samuel, and Samuel said, "You're going to be king." And Saul was like, "No, no, thank you, no, thank you." And so then later, when they got ready to do the official ceremony where they would cast lots and people from the different tribes and they would find out exactly who would be king, Samuel, of course, knew that Saul would be king. But Saul knew that as well because Samuel had found him and anointed him. Samuel, being prophet of God, he understood this was indeed his destiny. But Saul decided the best thing to do, and I love this passage in the Bible, was to hide among the baggage. He went out to where the people had traveled there, and they had their baggage or whatever. You know, it's not like Samsonites or anything. But he went out there, and he hid there. The first king of Israel, the first king of all the tribes of Israel, hid in the baggage because he did not want to be found, even though he knew that he would be selected, and he was selected. And so now he's telling David, "You are too young." You know, the Bible is filled with people who hear and who internalize that message. You are too young, or you're too old. Remember Abram, who would later be Abraham? Abraham, as he was there with his wife Sarah, and they were going on with their life, Abraham, who was advanced in years, Sarah, his wife, who was advanced in years, and God comes to him and says, "You must leave, and you must travel, and you must go, and I'm going to make of you a great nation, and all this stuff is going to be accomplished." And Abram was saying, "Well, hold on just a second. I am an old man. I'm an old man. My wife is an old woman. And now you're telling me, well, you're going to make of us a great nation. I'm going to go and start this great nation." I'm sure Abraham had heard many times, "You're an old person. You are too old to do this, that, and the other." And yet God said, "Not if I tell you to accomplish it. Not if I say this is a challenge, but I'll give you the abilities to accomplish that. The same thing with being too young. We have John, the youngest of the disciples of Jesus. John, who was there on the island of Patmos. John, who was a prisoner. He was an exile. He was on this little island of Patmos. And he was there. So he was thinking, I'm young and I'm a prisoner. I'm in exile. What can I do? So he's there walking on this rocky beach shore on the Sabbath day to worship God. And Jesus appears to him, gives him a vision. And he says, you, young person, you who are the youngest of the disciples, I'm going to have you do something great, even though you're in exile, even though you're a prisoner here. I'm going to have you accomplish something great and grand and glorious. You are going to give the letter of hope and victory to all Christians throughout all generations until Christ comes again. The book of Revelation is our assurance that God is the victorious God and that God will prevail against all evil, no matter how fierce that evil may appear. Too young, too old, God says, it doesn't matter. Whatever challenge there is, I will give you the abilities to conquer that challenge, to meet it head on. And also the idea of you're the wrong gender as well. The Bible is filled with women accomplishing so many different things. There's so many different examples we can give of that. Ruth is an amazing example. She was not only a female, she was not an Israelite. She was a Moabite. So she had several things against them. Then she was a widow as well. Oh, well, just count her out. She would be good to just get enough bread to eat each day. And yet, Ruth decided that God was with her, that she would be faithful to God, even if she wasn't an Israelite. She would be faithful to her mother-in-law, and that she would do what she could to make sure that they were blessed by God. And so she accomplished her faithful walk, with everything stacked up against her, with really the world, the society at the time saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do that. Naomi was telling her, go away, flee back to your people so that they can take care of you. And Ruth was saying, nope, nope, I'm here. I believe God, your God is now my God. We will accomplish this together. And of course, she stands as an enduring remembrance of someone who said no in the face of all the rest of the world saying, you can't do this. She was saying, no, I can do this because God is the one who strengthens me. Well, now Saul is saying, you're too young. You know, that just doesn't ring true. It doesn't ring true to me at all because I know that God can use young people. God can use children to accomplish marvelous and wonderful things. My third appointment, I went to serve Duncan Memorial United Methodist Church in Spartanburg. And I got there, and one of the first things I noticed was what I like to refer to as the sacred pink dogwood tree. A lot of churches have these. They're beautiful, of course. Somebody planted them. I love the fact that trees are sometimes planted around the churchyard in memory of someone. I think it's very fitting, very nice. But a lot of times, then, that pink dogwood tree becomes vitally important. The thing about pink dogwood trees is they don't live forever, and so that can be a problem, too. But when I walked up the church, I noticed right in front of the church, there was the pink dogwood tree. And I thought, oh, yes, there it is, the sacred pink dogwood tree. And so I noted it and everything, and someone commented on whose family it was from and all this stuff. And so we had worship service, and then they had a reception welcoming the new pastor and his wife and child. Tyler at that time was 7 years old. And so they were all very happy to see us. And then they started telling us about their neighborhood they were in, which is an older neighborhood, and they said at one point about 10 years before, we had a bunch of children from the neighborhood join and become a part of our church, and it was so amazing, and the pastor welcomed them and then started this huge children's choir, and they were called the Children of Thunder, and they said it was such an amazing thing, and their parents came and everything else. And I remembered the Children of Thunder because one year they sang at annual conference, which used to always meet in Spartanburg at Walford. And so they had the Children of Thunder choir come from Duncan Memorial, and it must have been 50 young children, and they were singing, you know, and it was so grand and glorious to see and everything. Well, all that had disappeared at Duncan Memorial, and people were sort of scratching their heads saying, well, we don't know exactly what happened, but we figured there must not be any children left in our neighborhood, and we can't reach out to them, and, you know, all the various different things. And so the reception was starting to wind down, and then somebody came in, and they were looking a little bit serious, and they said, there's a child playing in the pink dogwood tree. And I looked around and said, oh, that would be Tyler, because Tyler loved trees. He loved climbing trees. If there was a tree, he was going to climb it. And I thought, oh, that would be Tyler. So I walked outside. Well, the person said, but something strange is going on. And so several of us walked outside and looked, and Tyler had sure enough climbed up in the pink dogwood tree and was hanging around on the branches. But those children had seen him out there playing in the dogwood tree. And on a Sunday afternoon, they didn't have anything else to do, so they had all gathered around the pink dogwood tree, and they were also climbing on the pink dogwood tree. The tree was full of children. They were all playing and having a great time. There were children running around. It was just sort of like, oh, here are the children. We still have children in this neighborhood. They're right here. They just needed to know that they can come to the church. Don't let anyone tell you you're too young to accomplish what God would have you to do. Also, don't let anyone say that you're not ready. Saul used that. He was using every trick he could think of. You're not ready. You're not ready to do this. You're not prepared. You're not ready. You're too young and you don't know how to do this. Of course, David said, I've fought lions and bears. Of course, I'm ready. But he was trying to instill that notion to him. You know, give Saul credit. I guess he didn't want David to get slaughtered by this giant. But at the same time, he was saying, you're not ready, when he didn't really know. I think the problem was that Saul wasn't ready. And so he couldn't imagine anyone else being ready to accomplish that. Have you ever felt that you had a challenge from God, a challenge of what you must accomplish, of what God is calling you to do? And have you ever heard that voice saying, I don't think I'm quite ready? Or else the voice saying, you're not ready, screaming it at you. That voice that's in our heads, that voice that tells us what we can do and what we cannot do. You're not ready. As I was finishing my last semester at Erskine Seminary, one of the last things that we had to do was to pass the senior Bible exam. And it was a very simple test. They asked you any question they wanted to from the Bible, the entire Bible. And the secret was that you had to pass the senior Bible exam before you could graduate. And if you didn't pass it the first time, they would give it to you a second time. But they didn't say what would happen if you didn't pass the second time, except that you wouldn't graduate. You would have to go another semester because obviously you didn't know the Bible well enough to graduate from Erskine Seminary. So no pressure. So, of course, you know, I kept trying to study for the senior Bible exam, and I kept thinking, I'm not ready. How can you ever be ready for all the professors, all the staff of the seminary to throw any question they wish to, put it in a written form, and you have to sit there for about an hour and a half answering these questions from the Bible. And I kept thinking, I'm not ready. And so from my carport in Anderson to Erskine was 18 miles. And so I got in my car that morning of the senior Bible exam, and I drove 18 miles the whole way going, I'm not ready. There's no way I can be ready. I'm going to fail this test. There's no way I can be ready, until all of a sudden, it was like, I guess God got tired of me saying, Lord, I'm not ready. And all of a sudden, I had the sensation, it was very real, that I had passed the senior Bible exam, that I'd already passed it. Now, I've gone through a lot of exams. I've never had the sensation that I've already passed it, that I've already succeeded at the exam, but I had this wave come over me, you've already passed it. And I realized God is telling me, you're ready, you're good, and in effect, I'll let you know, you're so good at this, or you're good enough at this, that you've passed it already. And that gave me an amazing amount of confidence. And so I walked into that exam and I took it, and they kept asking me all these various questions, and I knew all the answers. And so I knew when I finished the exam that I had passed it, because there was nothing on there that I did not know. And several of my classmates did not pass it, and they had to retake it. But I was going, I don't know why, but God was telling me, you're ready. You are ready for this challenge. You are ready for what God is calling you to do. It wasn't because I was so smart and such a great Bible scholar. When I started seminary, I was shaking in my boots because I had not studied Bible or religion as an undergraduate. I was an English major. I had not studied anything. I went to Clemson. I did not take a single religious course at Clemson. I don't know why, but anyway, didn't take a single religious course. So I went into seminary thinking, these are all going to be Bible majors coming into seminary or religion majors coming in seminary, and I'm going to be like, huh, what? And so I was scared to death then, and then 3 years later, I still didn't think I was ready, and God was saying, okay, you're ready. You're ready for whatever challenge there is out there. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you think you're too old, too young, or the wrong gender, or whatever. There's no such thing as wrong gender. That God is saying, you're ready. You're ready for every challenge that might be there before you. Because God is with us to make sure that we're ready, to make sure that we can accomplish it. And of course, then Saul used the last argument, you don't have any experience. You know, you're not an experienced warrior. How can we expect you to go out there and do this? Because you've never been in battle, you know. And I love the scene where Saul gives him his armor and David's trying to put on this armor and he's going, I can't wear this stuff, you know, I'm just a sort of teenager sort of guy, so can you take all this stuff, because I can't even walk in it. I love that scene, because Saul's thinking he's equipping him, and David's saying, you're hindering me from doing what I need to do. The other interesting point is, you realize that Goliath had not been tested in battle. We're told the story of Goliath, and it says that he comes out there, and he defies them, and he says, send out your best warrior, and I'll beat whoever that is, and I will destroy them and everything else. He wants a one-on-one fight with their best warrior, and all the Saul's army says, not me, not me, nobody will fight him. So nobody really knew if this giant guy could really fight, and we never will know, because you know the end of the story. David slays him with a stone to the head, so we don't really know. Maybe he was a terrible fighter. Maybe they were doing the intimidation thing, which was obviously working. And so we don't know. He could have been a lousy fighter, but that was not necessary. He really wasn't tried by experience. And so Saul's saying, you don't have any experience as a warrior. David could have said, well, have you seen Goliath fight? Let's see. No, nobody's seen him fight either. But that wasn't the point. The experience, or the lack of experience, was there. The lack of experience in what could happen or would happen or whatever else. But David said, I've encountered the paw of the lion. I've encountered the paw of the bear. I know that I can accomplish it. But he knew it because God was with him when he faced the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear. He knew that God was with him to accomplish these things. And so therefore he knew that he could do it. He knew that this would be something that would happen because God was with him and God was making this a reality for him. When I was in graduate school at Clemson, I worked in the career services office, and we had a recruiter who was teaching us how to prepare the students for their interviews. And he said, you know, attitude means so much. He said, you have to make sure the students coming to be interviewed by the recruiters have a certain amount of positive attitude about what they can do and what they can accomplish. And he said, I had one kid who came in and sat down and said, you don't have any jobs, do you? And he said, I was going, no, I don't have any jobs. He's a recruiter on campus. You sort of figure he has jobs. But he said, the kid was going, you don't have any jobs. I don't have any jobs. He said, if you think there's nothing for you, then there's nothing for you. He said, you have to realize, and you have to have the confidence, that whether or not you have experience doesn't matter. The fact is that God is preparing a path for each and every one of us, each and every day. No matter how old, no matter how young, God is there. God is saying, this is what you can accomplish. This is what you will accomplish. My nephew, Nick, went to Birmingham Southern and majored in English. I was an English major, so I thought, all right, Rock, way to go. And so while he was doing that, I was telling him, I would ask him, you know, what are you planning on doing this? He said, I want to teach. I want to teach on the university level. And I would go, oh boy, good luck with that. And I don't think I ever tried to discourage him, but I sort of said, well, there are a lot of other things you can do with an English major too. But he always said he wanted to teach. So then he went to Chapel Hill to get his master's and PhD. And so I asked him after he'd been there about a month or so, I called and said, how is everything going? He said, well, he said, before we got started, the first thing they made us do was to go to one seminar after another seminar after another seminar. We would sit there all day while these people would stand and lecture us and say, there are no jobs in this field. You're going to work very hard to get this master's and PhD. Do not think that you are going to walk out and get a teaching position. They do not exist in this field. We want you to, he said, I got so tired of these seminars before we ever got started telling us there are no jobs in this field. He said, I want to say, got it. Good. We got that message. We're clear on that. But he kept going. And he kept working. And he kept doing rather amazing things and good things. And all of a sudden, before he'd finished his PhD, he got a 5-year fellowship at Chicago University, University of Chicago. So he's there, and we're all going, right, that's great. It's a very big honor, and he's there. Of course, I was going, it's only 5 years. Uh-oh. So then before his 5 years were up, he got a tenured position at Rutgers. Rutgers University, tenured, teaching English literature. So we were all going, whoa, he made it. Who would ever thought? And I was like, oh, boy. All those professors at Chapel Hill tell him, there are no jobs. He got a great job at Rutgers. Well, this past week, he just moved to go to his new school where he's going to be professor on tenure track at Oxford. Y'all can clap for Nick. He is now a professor at Oxford. And he said, y'all have to come visit. I go, put me down. I'd love to go visit Oxford. But he's now a professor of English at Oxford University. I still can't figure out what from Birmingham Southern to Oxford is just sort of an amazing leap. But along the way, people were saying, you can't do it. You can't. You can't. This isn't going to happen. And he kept going, well, I'm going to try anyway. I'm going to try to accomplish these things. If we don't try, of course, we won't succeed at anything. If we don't have faith in God, then we can't accomplish that. In 2 Kings chapter 6, it's that marvelous passage. It's one that we should memorize. Elijah's there, and the armies of the enemies have gathered with their chariots and horses, and they're there, and Elijah is there, and his companion is there with him. The companion is saying, look at all these chariots and the armies of our enemies. They're going to defeat us. Elijah says, there's more. More with us than with them. And he prays and says, Lord, open his eyes so that he can see. And the Lord causes his companion's eyes to open. And he sees and he says, I see the chariots of fire surrounding us. The chariots of fire, the armies of God. And of course, they prevailed. The interesting, lovely thing about this story is no one is killed. Elijah prays that the enemy armies will be blinded. They're blinded. They're brought into the city. And then he prays that their eyes would be opened. Their eyes are opened. And instead of them slaughtering them, they sit them down.